Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. The views of our guests, and, well, today our guest is Doug Valentine. We're going to be talking about something called Operation Phoenix. I suspect that the vast majority of the American people have never heard of Operation Phoenix. You should have heard about it. There should have been, of course, headlines day after day after day after day telling you about this terrible atrocity and demanding that the people who are responsible within these intelligence agencies be tried for murder. But, of course, you're never going to hear that. Operation Phoenix took place back during the Vietnam War. It was a CIA operation, although there were many Americans who were assigned to the operation. But the classic book, best book on this ever written, was written by our guest today, Douglas Valentine. And so I'm going to let Douglas tell you about it. He knows a lot more than I do. Douglas, thank you so very much for being with us.
You're very welcome, Dr. Stan.
Why don't you tell us just a little bit about who you are, how you got involved in researching this, and a little bit about your book.
Okay. My father was a prisoner of war in World War II, and I wrote my first book about him. Nobody in the family knew that he had been a prisoner of war. He kept it quiet, but he had a series of heart attacks, and he had a lot of problems that were related to that experience. And when he finally told me about it, I was 30 years old at the time. It was quite a surprise to learn that my father had been a prisoner of war and had been through this horrible experience. And I wrote my first book about him, and that was a success. But it had opened my eyes to a different world, a world where there are secrets and a secret kind of suffering that goes on that people have. And I wanted to, I'm 56, and I was a young man during the Vietnam War, and it had a big impact on me. And I wanted to write a book about Vietnam, but I wanted it to be, for the reader, the kind of experience that I had with finding out that my father had been a prisoner and had been tortured by the enemy and had all these terrible experiences that he had to suppress. So I wanted to write something about the Vietnam War that would get that across to the reader, that this was, there was something that was going on that was almost unspeakable, that was too hard to talk about. And I looked around for a subject, and somebody suggested I write about Phoenix, and I didn't know what Phoenix was, but it sure did fit the bill. It was a facet of the Vietnam War. It was created by the CIA, which is why it was such a big secret. And most of the people who were involved with it were traumatized by even just by participating in it. So it's not something that's abstract. The point I'm trying to make is that it's something that's very real, and these sorts of things, the kind of thing that Phoenix was, affects people, not just the people who are victims of the program, but the soldiers and the CIA officers and the people who participated in it are also victims of this sort of terrible thing that people concoct to fight the secret war.
But of course, the thing is that there were secret wars. There were a lot of things going on behind the scenes in the Vietnam War that were kept secret at that time and that are kept secret to this day, because they're really too horrible for the American people to accept. And it's so vitally important that the American people do know the truth, understand that war is not something heroic and noble. A war is a terrible thing. War, I think General Sherman had said, war is hell.
Well, that's true. And, for example...
Oh, hold right here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Doug Valentine, And Doug's father was in the Second World War and was brutally tortured. Well, he was a prisoner, but he would never speak of it until much later in life. Well, Doug, of course, then wrote a book about his father's experience as a POW in the Second World War. And then, of course, when Vietnam came along, Doug wanted to write a book about that. And he wrote a book about something that, well, most people have never heard of. I've heard of it because I've researched it and talked to people who were part of it who have never forgiven themselves for what they did. There was something known as Operation Phoenix. So you pick up the story there, Doug.
Okay. Phoenix was created in 1967 by the CIA station in Saigon. It was the culmination of a couple of years of frustration with being unable to destroy what was called the secret government. There was an insurgency in South Vietnam. A lot of people, a lot of Vietnamese, did not support the American-backed government. And they had formed a secret government, people who were a tailor or a farmer or a businessman or a teacher. By day, were actually members of this secret government, and they organized their own parallel society that was underground. And the CIA knew that it couldn't win the war militarily, that the only way it could actually defeat its enemy in South Vietnam was to destroy this secret government of civilians.
And, of course, didn't a lot of these people look upon us as the sequel to the French, the colonialists who had been there and enslaved them for so long, and they wanted a chance to be free. Wasn't this really what it was about?
Well, yes, and to be Buddhists and to practice their religion and have their culture the way it had always been, rather than having something superimposed upon them by the Americans.
And really, the Americans...
They wanted to live their way of life, which was not our way of life, and so there was a very deep-seated, strong insurgency. And it was civilians that the CIA went after in this Phoenix program, which was designed to identify the civilian members of the secret government and to either put them in interrogation centers where they would be tortured and would inform on the other members of the secret government, or they would be assassinated at night with their families at home in their beds. Or they would be indefinitely detained, which is...
Hold that thought right now.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Doug was explaining to us what the Operation Phoenix program was. It was a secret program engineered by the CIA to destroy the secret government. And there were a lot of people living in South Vietnam who resented America's being over there, who felt we were going to replace the French colonialism with American colonialism. We wanted them to live the way we thought that they ought to live, with our sense of values, and they didn't want that. They wanted to be free. Now, some of them may have been communists. Do you think the movement was primarily communist or not?
It was primarily nationalist. There was a lot of support from the communists in North Vietnam, but essentially it was a cultural revolution.
All right, so these people were certainly operating secretly in South Vietnam, and many of the South Vietnamese who hated the French, and they hated the new colonialists who were there, the Americans who were supposedly there to fight communism, but we really were never there to fight communism. In fact, Vietnam was a wonderful, wonderful diversion from what was going on in the United States at that time. But anyway, of course, the rationale, and I'm sure many of the people, many of the American special forces and other people, Marines that I know were affiliated with this, really believed that we were there to win the Vietnam War. So what really happened at that time?
What really happened is that there was a grassroots movement against the United States and the government that it had pretty much installed through the fact that it had billions of dollars to buy loyalty from certain powerful generals and politicians. But at the very, very grassroots level, down in the villages, that's where this insurgency was based. And as hard as the Americans tried, they couldn't change the very nature of life in Vietnamese villages. And so their only solution that was left for them to win the war was to actually go out and kill or incarcerate
or torture
or terrorize into submission the members of the secret government. And that's what the Phoenix program was intended to do.
Now, you mentioned that they not only killed the people that they suspected, they didn't know whether they were guilty, but they suspected being guilty, but they killed them and then their families as well.
Well, yes, and this the whole idea was to make it terrifying to be a person who was resisting the government. And if it was just killing the individuals themselves, it wouldn't have been so terrifying. But the idea was, if you become a member of the secret government, your family's at risk too, and all your friends. It's sort of like, you know, a mafia sort of mentality. Just really horrendous. And this is the thing that traumatized so many of the members of the Phoenix program, is that they were sent on these missions and told that, you know, we're going to capture the district chief in Tan Phong Village. Well, this is what happened to Senator Bob Kerry. Him and 8 Navy SEALs went into the village of Tan Phong to get the district chief, and they ended up killing 20 civilians and not getting the district chief. And that's what happened in Phoenix operation after Phoenix operation. They couldn't just get to this guy and snatch him in the middle of the night. They had to kill everybody around him, too. And that's what makes the thing so horrible.
But, of course, I understand that many times people were accused of being collaborators or members, and they really weren't members at all.
No,
somebody didn't like them, and so this was a way of getting rid of somebody you didn't like.
Right, and one CIA officer described Phoenix to me as the greatest blackmail scheme ever invented. Either you do what I want, or you're Viet Cong. And if your name goes on the Phoenix blacklist. And this is what corrupt officials were doing. And this is the great danger as to what's happening here in the United States right now. You know, with the Bush yesterday signing a bill that basically suspends habeas corpus and due process for anybody who's accused of being a terrorism suspect. And that's exactly the legal basis of Phoenix in Vietnam.
And so it's like deja vu all over again, and maybe that's why they're setting up all these detention camps and why they gave Halliburton, Dick Cheney's old firm, $385 million to build detention centers in the America. Well, they've already got dozens of them already, and they're getting another $385 million worth of detention camps, and I'm sure they're not going to be used to put illegal immigrants into. So who are they going to put in there?
Well, yeah, and the writing is on the wall, and these things are happening incrementally, and they've been happening, you know, at a greater rate since 9/11, since everybody has been in a sort of quasi-state of fear, of terror. And this is another thing. Another aspect of Phoenix was to terrorize people, and it's a type of psychological warfare that if people are afraid of some illusionary menace, they'll give up their rights. And that's what's happening here in the United States. The government has been very successful in frightening people into giving up their rights.
And of course, my understanding is that they many times would hire Vietnamese as assassins just to go out and kill people at night. Is that true?
That's true, yes.
And of course, what about cutting off the ears? You got paid for an ear.
Well, yeah, and mutilation, you know, it's terrifying. And this was part of the psychological warfare. For a Buddhist, you can't get into, you know, Buddhist heaven if certain parts of your body aren't intact. So the actual dismembering of Buddhists had a really deep-seated religious meaning too, as well. It wasn't just physical mutilation. It would sort of condemn a person to damnation.
And, of course, now, this was financed by our money, American tax money, through the Central Intelligence Agency. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
How many people did they kill?
The estimate is 25,000 to 40,000, but I think those are very conservative estimates, and it was probably twice as many or maybe 10 times as many.
I mean, I certainly Colonel Bogreich told me about 60,000, but, you know, the figures we will never know because those records are sealed, and they cannot let the American people know that happened and that nobody was ever punished. And people at the highest levels of government had to know about this plan of murder.
And they certainly did, but they're very adept at making policy statements. For example, the people who created Phoenix said, We never intended for any innocent person to get killed. And if it did, it was an accident. But the operational reality, the reality on the ground, was the exact opposite, where it was intended for innocent people to get killed as part of a program of terror, which is one of the greatest ways to control people, is to make them afraid.
How did you manage to do your research on this? Were you able to get some of the people in the Central Intelligence Agency or Special Forces or certainly the military that was assigned there to talk to you about it? Because obviously this was a top secret program. And to this very day, they don't want the American people to know about Operation Phoenix.
I got all those types of people to talk to me. And of course, the biggest success was getting the CIA people to talk to me. And that I did very early on. I talked to William Colby, who at one point had been director of Central Intelligence. He was also one of the people responsible for creating Phoenix and its policies. And he liked me. And through him, I spoke to him early in my research. He introduced me to all the major CIA officers who were involved in the Phoenix program. And because Colby asked them to talk to me, they all did. And pretty soon I was getting, you know, conversations going between all sorts of CIA guys. Something that, as far as I know, has never been done before.
Well, now, how did Colby really feel about this? Did he think it was a good idea? Did he think it got out of hand or what? Did he rationalize it because, after all, we were there to defeat communism?
It's hard to know what he really felt. I can tell you what he said to me, and you know what he said to me was pretty much exactly a repetition of his policy statements, that he thought it was a good program, that he thought it was going to protect the average law-abiding Vietnamese citizen from evil communists, and that if there were any abuses, it was because of rogues who were stepping outside of the parameters that were set forward for them. But that's what Colby was expert at doing. And the way he served me was simply by introducing me to other CIA officers who were far more direct and honest in their appraisal of the program.
And, of course, well, these other officers told you that what really went on?
Yes.
And, of course, weren't some of them offended by what had happened? Didn't some of them have a moral compass and realize it's wrong to terrorize people, to kill people, you know, in the name of helping them?
Some of them have flashes of it. In order to become a CIA officer, you have to go through quite a bit of indoctrination. The same with the military. There were very few military officers or CIA officers who spoke out against Phoenix or any of the terrible things that were going on in Vietnam at the time. I had the advantage of talking to these people 15 years after the fact, and a lot of them had matured in some ways or found religion in some, you know, or somehow were not able to sleep at night and felt that they had to try to expunge some of the demons, the Phoenix demons that were driving them to despair. And so they would talk to me as a way of having a kind of catharsis. But unfortunately, when these people are in their jobs, doing what they're supposed to do, they rarely step out of line because of the indoctrination they have to go through.
I mean, I heard it was a standard procedure to take 3 or 4 Vietnamese up in a helicopter and just start throwing them out one at a time, hoping the last one would talk.
Yes, and not only that, they would also put dozens of Vietnamese on C-130s and large planes and just fly them out over the ocean and dump them out just to kill them for no purpose at all. Not for any intelligence.
But the American,
this is a way of disappearing them.
But, of course, the American people can't believe that. I mean, we're a Christian country. We have ideals. We'd never do anything like that. That's the sort of thing the communists would do.
Well, that's why it's not talked about, Dr.
And, of course, your book is... we'll talk about how people can get hold of your book when we get back. Ladies and gentlemen, people have to understand there really, I believe, are dark and sinister forces in our country. If you can conceal something of this magnitude, Operation Phoenix, you'll find it listed up on the Internet. But, of course, you'll never hear anybody like Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity talking about it. Well, Doug, certainly, now, of course, you wrote your book many, many years ago. Is it still available in print?
Yes, it is, through iUniverse.com.
All right, fine. Well, when we get our stations back, I certainly want to go ahead and put that out. In fact, we might even carry it ourselves, because I think it is such an important subject for people to understand that there really are people who have a different worldview, I think, than you and I, and they're not offended by what happened, after
all. No,
they're
not, but they should be. And
should be.
I would like to, yes, but people, you know, tend to live in a state of denial, and rather, one of the hardest things in the world to do is to admit that you or your country could be wrong about something. But sometimes, in order to grow and to move forward, you have to be self-critical. And you can't count on the government to criticize itself, so it's necessary for citizens to find out the truth for themselves, and you have to be able to face up to some pretty tough things in order to do that. If I could make one point, on one of the headlines in the New York Times today was that the special police in Iraq are being reorganized because they're responsible for the militias and the death squads. But what the New York Times doesn't tell you is that the CIA advises the special police, and that the special police in Iraq could not be creating militias and death squads without the CIA knowing about it. And in fact, the CIA actually funds and pays for the salaries of the special police in Iraq. So it's the same thing. Phoenix is going on right now in Iraq, and it's just not called the Phoenix program. But the same thing is happening right now today.
Well, that's because people really don't understand what happened in Vietnam, which is one reason I wanted to get you on. I think it's so vitally important that people understand what's going on in Iraq today. Is deja vu all over again, the same man at the very, very top of this whole thing? And in Vietnam was a man named Henry Kissinger. And who is the chief advisor to both Dick Cheney and George Bush today, according to Bob Woodward's most recent book, State of Siege? Why, Henry Kissinger,
yep.
Who said, you know, the only way out of Iraq is by victory. He was saying the same thing in Vietnam, you know, 35 years ago.
Yes, and he sold the Vietnamese down the river by cutting a very nice deal with the Chinese.
Uh-huh.
And if a deal comes along that's sweeter, then he'll make that deal. And Kissinger is not the kind of guy that you'd want to trust as far as you could throw him.
You know, I think it's really so tragic that most Americans really don't understand the history, and most Americans have never heard of Operation Phoenix, but I hope maybe we can help them to do that, and we can help them to get the book and get the book disseminated across America. Now, yours is really the only real book I've been able to find on it, isn't it?
Well, yes, and what happened was, once Colby realized that I was going to write a book that wasn't, you know, he had helped me, and he felt, once he realized that I wasn't going to write a book that made him into a hero, but was, you know, critical of the CIA, they actually got the CIA actually went out and got two or three people to write books about Phoenix that cast it in a very forgiving and kind light. So there's a lot of disinformation out there about what Phoenix was really all about. Fortunately, my book was based on interviews with CIA officers, the people who actually ran the program, and I have them on tape, and there's no way that they can retract what they said, so my book really is the only one that's authoritative.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Doug was just saying that when William Colby found out that our guest, Douglas Valentine, was going to write a story that was not favorable to Operation Phoenix, then Colby got several people to write books saying how wonderful this whole idea was, you know, how patriotic it was, and how it helped to win the war, but of course, it really isn't true. Well, do you have any thoughts at all about the strange death of William Colby? I mean, because some people said that he was about ready to blow the whistle on a lot of things. Do you think there's any truth to that, or is that simply speculation?
No, I think there may be some truth to it. There were his death was certainly unusual, and within this strange, unusual group that I hang out with, where we really know a little bit more about these arcane things than most people. The phrase that went around wasn't who would kill William Colby, but who didn't want to kill him.
Well, of course, for those people who don't remember, he was apparently writing a book. He was staying at a cabin by himself, and in the middle of a thunderstorm with the water boiling on the stove or something of the sort, he went for a canoe ride, and, of course, drowned in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't... There was almost an air of unreality about the story. You knew that somebody had killed him. But then, after all, he was responsible for so many deaths and the torture of so many people, and I don't care how you justify it. Oh, we have to win this war. That's why we have to torture the people. How could any moral peace person take that position?
Well, unfortunately, for example, I live in the state of Massachusetts, and right to the south of us is the state of Connecticut. And there are two congressional districts. And in the second congressional district is a Republican named Rob Simmons, who sits on he's the congressman from Connecticut from the second district, and he sits on the Armed Services Committee. He was a CIA officer in Vietnam, and he ran one of the CIA's interrogation centers that was part of the Phoenix program. So what you actually have is a man who's making policy for the U.S. government, who was in the CIA, ran one of these really, these interrogation centers were more like torture chambers, and he visited Guantanamo, and he said it wasn't nearly as bad as anything that he had seen in Vietnam.
I imagine that really is true.
And so the fact of the matter is that our congressional representatives are actually, at least in the case of Rob Simmons, people who have perpetrated these crimes.
Well, we know, for instance, that the man who was in charge of the House Intelligence Committee, Oversight Committee, was a man named Porter Goss, a lifelong member of the Central Intelligence Agency, who left Congress to become director of the CIA, and then, of course, they put him in charge of all things investigating what happened on 9/11. He was the co-chairman of the House Joint Select Inquiry, looking at to tell us the truth whether the CIA was involved in the 9/11 attack, and you'd never see, guess what happened? They didn't find any involvement.
Right. You know, so unfortunately, democracy has been hijacked from us, and it's been hijacked by these very powerful industrialists, I guess is probably the best way to say it, for whom the CIA really works. They don't work for you. They don't work for me. They don't work for the middle class. They don't work for the lower class. They work for a very elite group of Americans who control the wealth in this country. And their job is to, through whatever means possible, even if it means flying planes into the World Trade Center, to preserve the privileges of this, you know, ruling 1 or 2 or 3% of the industrialists in this country. And frankly, they do a very, very, very good job of it.
No, I think that they really do, but we really have to get the American people to understand that the electoral process has become a fraud. They control both political parties, they control our newspapers, most of our television state outlets, certainly most of our radio stations, almost all of the major publishing houses that publish books in this country, Hollywood, they control certainly what we see on television, ultimately what we tend to believe. Well, our guest today, of course, is Doug Valentine. And Doug has written a book. Is that Operation Phoenix? What's the title?
It's called The Phoenix Program.
The Phoenix Program, okay. Well, anyway, of course, people can go up on the Internet and, of course, look up The Phoenix Program or Operation Phoenix or whatever you'd like to. But it's important for you to find out if this is really true. And if it is true, how is it that you've never heard of this before? That was really what got me started on this 44 years ago when somebody talked about something called Operation Keelhaul, which was the planned murder of 6 million of Russians, many who were here in the United States and in Canada and in England and Western Europe were forcibly repatriated to Russia at the end of the Second World War to be killed. Fortunately, they only killed about 4 million of them right away. The other 2 million, of course, lived a life of helpless and hopeless desperation, never allowed to get a job in Russia, and never allowed to escape. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Doug Valentine. I was just saying that what got me started on this odyssey 44 years ago was the realization that after having attended college and, you know, taking courses in history and minored in history, I'd never heard of Operation Keelhaul at the end of the Second World War, a planned program to forcibly repatriate 6 million Russians to Russia, where the vast majority of them were killed, and we knew they were going to be killed. How could you conceal that from the American people? Well, the same way that they're concealed of what Doug Valentine has written about, and that is Operation Phoenix. Now, certainly, you know, was this operated out of Saigon? How was it? How did it work? And do you know anything about the hierarchy? And did they recruit a lot of regular soldiers and others into this program, or were they special forces? Who was it who was coordinating it?
Well, it was a creation of the CIA station in Saigon. And in the beginning, it was run by CIA officers at the national level. There was a Phoenix directorate in Saigon, and it was headed originally by a man named Evan Parker, who had been in the OSS with Colby. They had been Jedburghs together. So they knew each other personally. And Parker was the first Phoenix director. He was a career CIA officer. And Phoenix was in each of the four regions. There was a Phoenix office, and then in every one of the 44 provinces. And they were CIA officers in charge at the province level. Once you got down to the district level, and there were 250 districts in South Vietnam. A province was like a state in the United States, but the districts were more like counties. The military got involved. So the further down the chain of command you got, the more likely you were to find special forces, force recon marines, army intelligence officers or enlisted men. And down at the village level, regular soldiers would be called upon by the Phoenix district people or the Phoenix province people to form blocking forces so that the special sort of Phoenix assassination teams could get in and out. Every once in a while, regular army guys would just, you know, be told, go there, do this, you know, cordon off this village so some guys can go in and do something. So even average soldiers would become tangentially involved or even directly involved in Phoenix. And there's a lot of evidence that Phoenix, that My Lai Massacre was itself a Phoenix operation.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Douglas Valentine. His book is The Phoenix Program, and it's a book that you won't like to read. But it's an important part of history that everyone should read. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're talking about with Douglas Valentine about his book, The Phoenix Program. And you have to understand history. You have to understand that they have been able to conceal this because of their control of the media. And, of course, the CIA works in conjunction with what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. And these people of great wealth who have a different agenda, whose loyalty is not to America but to this internationalist, dream with themselves ruling everything. And, of course, they don't want the American people to understand what really happened in Vietnam. They don't want them to understand about the Phoenix Program, where somewhere between 20,000 maybe 40,000, that's the official figure, but Doug thinks it could be maybe double that or 10 times that number, of civilians were tortured and murdered, simply because they were accused of being part of this underground movement that opposed American colonialism. Would that be a fair statement?
That's absolutely fair.
Well, basically, what sort of stories did they actually tell you about the individuals? Did they ever realize that they were killing innocent people in many instances and then killing their families as well?
I mean, oh, yes, and I've actually talked with Phoenix officers, one in particular, who asked to be relieved from the program. It was a very interesting case study. He wrote to the Phoenix director, who was a guy named John Mason, Parker's replacement, another CIA career officer, and asked to be relieved from the program. This caused a real uproar because they felt that anybody with a conscience should be weeded out of the program. This guy wanted out of the program because he didn't like the torture, he didn't like the murder of innocents, and it was felt that the problem was that they weren't screening people well enough to make sure that those with weak stomachs weren't getting involved in the Phoenix program. Again, it comes back to the idea that the people who participate in these programs are indoctrinated. Basically, they're brainwashed. Uh-huh. And that's one of the things that the military and the CIA are very good at. They say, join the military and we'll give you a college education, or join the CIA and serve your country.
Of course, isn't a lot of this really based upon patriotism? It's for God and country, and they justify these terrible things without ever realizing the moral implications of what they're
doing.
That's
right. And so by the time you get done, if you join the military or the CIA, without knowing what you're really getting into, you can be destroyed. You basically can lose your soul. And I found this over and over and over again. The people I interviewed would break down and just start crying, just weeping about the things that they had seen and that had happened. Lots of times they would say talking with me was the first time it had happened to them. And it was the same thing I had seen with my father. The way, it's not just the people who are kidnapped and tortured or, you know, murdered by these programs who suffer. It's the people who run the programs who suffer, too. It's the people who participate in them. They, at the time, they may think they're doing the right thing, but you can't do these sorts of horrible things and get out okay.
You're absolutely right.
You can't lie and steal and cheat and not bring those skills into your personal life. Then you're going to lie and you're going to steal and you're going to cheat on your wife.
Sure.
And your friends, because those are the things that you've been taught to do. You can't go out and murder and torture and kidnap innocent people in Vietnam or Iraq or Afghanistan or Central America or South America and then come home and be a good dad. You just can't do it.
You know, I know a lot of our young men are coming back from Iraq today and they're just psychologically wiped out because of course, well, maybe they've just seen their friends killed, or maybe they've killed, who knows, they're not about to talk about it. They can't talk about it because it's too horrible to contemplate.
That's right, and you can't come home and tell your family and friends about these awful things because you're going to make them feel awful, and then nobody's going to like you, and then you'll feel awful. So it's just a terrible thing all around, and it's just got to stop.
Well, of course, the thing is that we will not stop it unless we can get the truth out about Operation Phoenix. If people don't understand what happened there, and the fact because of the degree of control over the medium, most people have never heard of it, and then, of course, that explains how they're able to get away with this in Iraq today, when, as Doug Ballantyne, our guest, was saying, the CIA is advising the Iraqi police, who are running the death squads that are torturing and killing people in Iraq today, financed, of course, with your money. I mean, all of these militias are operating. We're financing them, and they're killing people. In fact, I suspect we're financing both the Shias and the Sunnis. And, of course, the slaughter continues. But then, of course, that justifies our staying there, which is what it's really all about.
That's right. The idea isn't to bring peace and harmony to Iraq. It's to destabilize the country.
Right.
And to keep it in a constant state of chaos so that we can control it. But getting back to the media, in this article in the New York Times today, they talk about how the special police is being reorganized, but they don't tell you that the CIA advises the special police. You never see those three little letters in the New York Times, CIA. They don't tell you about it, but they do know about it. They know very well about it. And I remember talking when I was doing the Phoenix Program book, and I was talking with the CIA officers who ran the Phoenix program in South Vietnam, and they told me how constantly reporters from the New York Times and all the other papers and the TV shows in at the time would come into their offices and talk with them, and how they all knew about Phoenix at the time. What the idea was is that they formed, all the newspaper people formed relationships with these CIA guys, and in exchange for inside tips, they kept all their dirty deeds quiet. And that's what's going on today, too. You may think that those good-looking, smiling, friendly people on TV news are your friends, but they're not.
No, they're not, my goodness. Why, maybe the next thing you're going to tell me is there's no Santa Claus. But anyway, I think it's so vitally important that the American people understand that what happened in Vietnam was a great crime against humanity. And yet, you know, it's that the idea that we were going to go over there to defeat communism. Well, those of you who've heard our programs before will remember that I have told you I personally interviewed the American ambassador to Laos at the time, William H. Sullivan, who actually went to Paris along with Kissinger to negotiate the peace process and peace treaty. And he told me, I never understood why we didn't win the war. I'm not a military person. I could have won the war in 2 months. General Lew Walt, a four-star Marine general, told me the same thing. But then we didn't want to win the war in Iraq, pardon me, in Vietnam. We were funding the North Vietnamese, indirectly by funding the Russians who were supplying the weapons and the trucks, and the trucks were built in the Kama River plant that we financed and we built for the Russians during the Vietnam War so they could carry the supplies down the Ho Chi Minh Trail to kill our boys. And we were never allowed to hit the major targets. We needed the war as a great distraction, just as we need the war in Iraq, a great distraction as we lose our freedom in America today. Well, Doug, you know, of course, your book has been out how many years? It's many, many years since you wrote it, isn't it?
Yes, it was published in 1990.
What sort of response did it get? What about the media? Did the media ever cover it? Did you ever get on major television?
Yes, it got a half-page review in the New York Times, and the person who wrote the review was Morley Safer. I don't know if you remember.
No, that. I remember Morley on 60 Minutes, right?
Yes, and he had just written a book about Vietnam himself, and the Times let him do a review of my book. Of course, they didn't ask me to do a review of his book, but he did a half-page review of my book, and he couldn't trash it based on the content because everything was documented and true, so he trashed it in terms of style and devoted a half a page to it. But the reason he did it is because I took the reporters, and I blamed all the reporters who were there covering the Vietnam War as much as I blamed the CIA or I blamed the military, because, as I was telling you earlier, the reporters were all aware that the CIA was running a Phoenix program. They all knew about the kidnappings. They all knew about that the CIA was behind the kidnappings and the torture and the murders and the imprisonment, just like the media people in Iraq all know the CIA is behind it over there. They just don't tell you about it.
Well, of course, Morley Safer was over there because certainly General Lew Walt told me that he was in command there as a four-star, three or four-star general. And then actually Safer was with him when they went into a building. Of course, there was nobody in it other than Viet Cong, and they were, they were using that as a base. And of course, as the Walt and his men moved into the building, why the Viet Cong fled. And so Walt ordered the city to be burned down. There was nobody in it. But Morley Safer went to an adjacent village and got some pictures of children crying and screaming and then he put the story, about the burning village and then these children together as if they'd burned down this village all full of little helpless children and women and children, and put that on major television. And, of course, General Walt said, he called Safer and he said, how dare you do that? You're out of my area. You'll never be allowed to come in here again. You're dishonest. And Safer laughed and said, oh, well, wait till the orders come down. And the orders did come down that Safer was to be allowed to go in with the Marines again. And General Walt told me that story. He hated Safer because he was dishonest. And until recently, of course, he has been on 60 Minutes as one of the paragons of honesty and integrity. The 60 Minutes gives you today.
Well, I call him Morley CIA-fer.
All right, fine. And of course,
him and CIA Moore Hirsch are good buddies.
All right. Well, of course, sometimes Hirsch comes out with some pretty good information, don't you think, or do you?
I think that Seymour Hirsch comes up with good information probably 75% of the time, maybe even more. But what's important is that he covers up the what's really, really important that 10 or 15 or 25% of the time, the stuff that you really need to know, he can be counted on not to tell you.
All right, fine.
Well, he can be counted on to tell you just enough.
Well, of course, he has a reputation to keep, and I always enjoy reading his articles, but I suspect that maybe if he did tell the real truth, why he wouldn't need to be writing, or maybe like our good friend Gary Webb, who committed suicide by shooting himself in the head twice, to make sure he was dead.
Yep. So CIA, Seymour, he plays by the rules.
All right. Well, of course,
which is why he continues to get sources inside the CIA and the military. If he was actually telling the truth, he wouldn't have sources inside the CIA and the military.
All right. Well, did you come under any pressure at all for writing the book?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Every conceivable time. I was told I would never ever get another book published.
Well, did you ever get another book published?
Yes, I did, but it took 15 years.
Beg your pardon?
Yes, I did, but it took 15 years.
Well, of course, this is what they do. And there's, of course, our good friend Monica Jensen Stevenson. She wrote one book. They pulled it off the shelves, kissed the boys goodbye. She got the copyright back, moved to Canada with her husband. I got it republished up there. Somebody bought the publisher and accidentally shredded 5,000 copies of Kiss the Boys Goodbye. Her second book, A Spite House, she got sued, and of course the publisher was forced to pull that off the market as one of the provisions of settling the suit.
Yeah.
So they'll come after you. You're lucky they haven't come after you in other ways as well.
Well, I could go into my own personal problems, but if it's nothing, if you can imagine it, it's happened.
All right, fine. Well, I imagine it. We won't get into that, but I think people have to understand, ladies and gentlemen out there in the audience, that Doug Valentine's a very courageous man, and he's had the courage to bring out the story of Operation Phoenix, and I think we're going to want to carry his book, because you need to know. And if you can get people to understand Operation Phoenix, you can get them to understand that somebody is controlling their reality. So basically, as you go into the background of Operation Phoenix, and you know, here we got 20 to 40 to, you know, 100,000 people, civilians who've been killed, and of course, some of them horribly tortured, and many of the CIA officers involved. Really, this had a profound impact on them. I know I had a friend of mine, Lieutenant Colonel Tom McKinney, was a Marine officer, and when he realized what he'd done, he was just totally devastated. Of course, he thought they were in Vietnam to win the war and to defeat communism, never realizing the whole thing was a charade, like our effort, of course, to defeat Al-Qaeda. And, of course, every time we just got them cornered, why, we just happened to let them escape right along with Osama bin Laden.
Yes, and it's the same thing as Phoenix. In Phoenix, they kept saying they had blacklists, and they kept thinking that all they had to do was knock off everybody on the blacklist and everything would be okay, except that every time they knocked off a district chief in this district, somebody would fill that position. Because they never got at the root causes. The whole idea of Phoenix and these similar types of programs is that if you kill enough people, you'll solve the problem. But the problems are economic. The problems are problems of social justice. They're really deep-seated problems that have to do with distribution of wealth, with control of airwaves, nationalization of natural resources, the distribution of natural resources, problems that are really huge and really big. And if those problems were addressed, the prerogatives of the ruling elite would be challenged, and that can't happen.
Well, no, we're told that the people over in Vietnam, they just loved us. And I see that probably some of them did. Some of them did very well with us there. But what do you think that the average person felt about the way that, knowing Operation Phoenix, that they certainly knew what was going on, didn't they?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I remember I went to Vietnam in 1991. I'll tell you a story that sort of sums it up. And I was going out into the countryside near Cambodia, and I was traveling with a family, and they were laughing. At the time, the United States did not have diplomatic relations with Vietnam. I had to get in through the Brits, got me a visa out of the embassy in London. So I was in the country, and there were not many Americans in Vietnam in 1991, and we were traveling out near Cambodia. And this family was telling me how the CIA would constantly send in guys who looked like me. And what they were looking for was deserters, American Army deserters who were living out in that region. There was probably 100 of them left.
Now, in other words, this is 1991.
And the CIA was trying to find American deserters in Vietnam, and they would send in tourists, you know, who resembled me, young Anglo-American kind of, you know, looking guy.
Well, were they sending the men, of course, to bring them home, or were they sending them in to kill them?
To kill them. And,
to kill them, and in fact that they were killing the deserters who were there.
That's right. And the Vietnamese family that I was traveling with was laughing about it, because there had actually been, the Vietnamese were protecting these people, the deserters. And they would send, the CIA would send in guys to try and track them down. And the Vietnamese would actually have this little cottage industry where they'd make up dog tags and stuff like that. And they would actually pretend to lead these CIA guys around to deserters who didn't exist. And they would take their CIA money and they would use it to buy food and, you know, farm equipment and stuff like that. But it was the same thing during the Vietnam War. The people knew who was in the secret government, and they knew who the spies were. It was no secret. It's only a secret to the Americans.
All right, hold on back. We'll be back in just a moment here with Doug Valentine, the book, The Phoenix Project. Well, Doug, we've got about 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program. And so, basically, you know, you were over there, certainly, and it's so tragic, because I've talked to at least one man, and he was his job was to go out and kill American deserters. In fact, I've talked to two of them. One of them was Operation Tailwind. They were there to kill Americans. And there was another gentleman who lives in our area. His job was as a sniper to kill them. And then Monica Jensen Stevenson talked about that in her book, Spite House. And these young Americans have never gotten over the fact that they killed Americans who deserted, you know, during the Vietnam War. A war when we were financing the North Vietnamese who were killing our boys in the South. That's what's so incredible about the whole incredible story. And I don't think most people in the military ever really understood that we were financing the very enemy that we were fighting.
Yes, and this is all part of, it's all part of Phoenix. This going after deserters was part of it too, because if you're a deserter, you're considered part of the enemy infrastructure.
And so very few people really understand Vietnam, this aspect of it, and to this very day, why Morley Safer and the others will never tell you the truth.
No, they won't, because they're complicit.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
Oh, just to be brave and not to be afraid. That fear is really the tool that's being used to deceive us, to make us afraid. So just be brave and face up to what's going on. If it's even if it's painful, it's what's necessary, is maybe to feel a little moral pain in order to make the situation better. But be brave and do it.
And of course, the thing is, the truth. Well, only the truth will set us free. We have to get the truth out, which is why I do what I do, and I'm sure why you do what you do. Are you getting many requests to do programs on Phoenix anymore?
Oh, yes, all the time. Especially nowadays when people realize it's coming home to roost.
Well, of course, you know, certainly men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And because we didn't oppose Vietnam and we'd never brought the truth out about Vietnam, now we're involved in a terrible war in Afghanistan and an even more terrible war in Iraq, and heaven only knows what lies ahead, because our leaders appear to be intent upon expanding this war in the Middle East and bringing on this class of civilizations. And remember, of course, that Iran is simply a client state of Russia and China. Both countries were building up their military potential. We're not doing anything we can to protect the American people. None of it makes sense. Unless there's another agenda. Doug Valentine, thanks very much for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Website, www.douglasvalentine.com. I will give that again here in just a moment. Thanks so much, Doug.
Okay, you're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and if you'd like to go to Doug's website, it's www.douglasvalentine.com. That's www.douglasvalentine.com. If you'd like to know the story of Vietnam, why, of course, you really need to get our four-tape set on Vietnam, our four-tape set on One Man Returned. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set on Vietnam, which we recommend, although we have one four-tape set on The Men We Left Behind. And we did abandon, you know, well over a thousand troops in Vietnam and another 1,000 in Laos. They were CIA operatives that were simply abandoned to live out the rest of their life in slavery. And of course, the Laotians and the North Vietnamese were glad to give them back. It was simply the evil people under Henry Kissinger and John McCain and John Kerry, Senator John Kerry, have done everything to cover up the truth about the men we abandoned. And so if you'd like to get the Vietnam special, we've recommended that the Vietnam special, and we have so much information that you need to get to understand what's going on today. But behind everything is a spiritual battle, because there really is organized evil in the world today. We're going to be carrying the book, The Phoenix Program. You can get it by your local bookstore. We will be carrying it if we get a request for it. I think it's an important issue because, like Operation Keelhaul, most people have never heard of Operation Keelhaul. Most people have never heard of Operation Phoenix or the book The Phoenix Project. And you need to understand what's really going on behind the scenes today. How, you know, people in the United States finance communism from its inception. That's covered in a video we have called The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, or the book Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, and certainly Brotherhood of Darkness, my book, covers this and covers some of the very most important aspects of how we financed Russian Bolshevism from its inception, and just as we're building up communist China today. The miracle you see in China has nothing to do with their capacity. It has to do with trillions of dollars of American money flowing into China through our banks and through our corporations and through the World Bank and through the Agency for International Development and the International Monetary Fund and the Asian Development Bank, and under one guise or another to build up communist China in preparation for the coming war. And do not think this is imaginary. It's very real, because we're dealing with organized evil that relishes the horror of war. And if you think we're going to escape the coming confrontation and the coming nuclear holocaust, I think that you are very mistaken. I was stationed in Germany after the Second World War. I saw the cities, the rubble, where once these great German cities had stood and the great cathedrals had stood, and what a horrible thing it was. I hate to think of it happening here, but unless we have a revival in this country and our country turns back to God and we get rid of the wicked people who control both political parties and the wealth of our nation and our banking system and our industries, nothing is going to change. You need to get my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get the other books we have. You need to read Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, written from a liberal point of view, about the secret society that today controls the American government. It's known as, well, the Council on Foreign Relations is simply a front for the Roundtable Group, which is part of the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created, and almost nobody's ever heard of the secret society Cecil Rhodes created. I talked to a gentleman last night. If you want to get a copy of my interview with Dr. Erdman, it's available. He was over at the British Museum and the Oxford House, the Rhodes House at Oxford, you know, just a couple of years ago, writing his book. And they wouldn't let him see the figures, the papers from 100 years ago. And when he went to the British Museum, they would have people there stationed with him so that, you know, he couldn't really take the papers out. He couldn't even allow to copy them. Things that happened 85 to 100 years ago. They don't want you to know the truth. Remember, we're having our all-day seminar on the 29th of this month. That's a week from Sunday. If you're going to come, you're going to have reservations. You're going to have to make them this week. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. And please pray for revival, and pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.